Father. A Christmas Carol, Scrooge and Marley, Act One, by Israel Horovitz.
The place of the play. Various locations in and around the city of London, including Scrooge's chambers and offices, the Cratchit home, Fred's home, Scrooge's school, Fezziwig's offices, Old Joe's hideaway. The time of the play. The entire action of the play takes place on Christmas Eve, Christmas Day, and the morning after Christmas, 1843. Act 1. Scene 1. Ghostly music in auditorium. A single spotlight on Jacob Marley downstage center. He is ancient, awful, dead-eyed. He speaks straight out to auditorium.
My name is Jacob Marley, and I am dead. Oh, no, there's no doubt that I am dead. The register of my burial was signed by the clergyman, the clerk, the undertaker, and by my chief mourner, Ebenezer Scrooge. I am dead as a doornail.
A spotlight fades up stage right on Scrooge in his counting house, counting. Lettering on the window behind Scrooge reads, Scrooge and Marley, LTD. The spotlight is tight on Scrooge's head and shoulders. We shall not yet see into the offices and setting. Ghostly music continues under. Marley looks across at Scrooge pitifully. After a moment's pause,
I present him to you. Ebenezer Scrooge, England's most tight-fisted hand at the grindstone. Scrooge, a squeezing, wrenching, grasping, scraping, clutching, covetous old sinner, secret and self-contained and solitary as an oyster. The cold within him freezes his old features, nips his pointed nose, shrivels his cheek, stiffens his gait, makes his eyes red, his thin lips blue, and speaks out shrewdly in his grating voice. Look at him. Look at him.
Scrooge counts and mumbles.
10 times 4, you can minus. They owe me money, and I will collect. I will have them jailed if I have to. They owe me money, and I will collect what is due me.
Marley moves towards Scrooge 2 steps. The spotlight stays with him.
He and I were partners for I don't know how many years. Scrooge was my sole executor, my sole administrator, my sole assign, my sole residuary legatee, my sole friend, and my sole mourner. But Scrooge was not so cut up by the sad event of my death, but that he was an excellent man of business on the very day of my funeral, and solemnized it with an undoubted bargain. He never painted out my name from the window. There it stands, on the window and above the warehouse door. Scrooge and Marley. Sometimes people new to our business call him Scrooge, and sometimes they call him Marley. He answers to both names. It's all the same to him. And it's cheaper than painting in a new sign, isn't it?
Pauses. Moves closer to Scrooge.
Nobody has ever stopped him in the street to say, with gladsome looks, My dear Scrooge, how are you? When will you come to see me? No beggars implored him to bestow a trifle. No children ever ask him what it is o'clock. No man or woman, now or ever in his life, not once inquire the way to such and such a place.
Marley stands next to Scrooge now. They share, so it seems, a spotlight.
But what does Scrooge care of any of this? It is the very thing he likes. To edge his way along the crowded paths of life, warning all human sympathy to keep its distance.
A ghostly bell rings in the distance. Marley moves away from Scrooge now, heading downstage again. As he does, he takes the light. Scrooge has disappeared into the black void beyond. Marley walks downstage center, talking directly to the audience. Pauses.
The bell tolls, and I must take my leave. You must stay a while with Scrooge and watch him play out his Scroogey life. It is now the story. The once upon a time. Scrooge is busy in his counting house. Where else? Christmas Eve, and Scrooge is busy in his counting house. It is cold, bleak, biting weather outside, foggy withal. And if you listen closely, you can hear the people in the court go wheezing up and down, beating their hands upon their breasts and stamping their feet upon the pavement stones to warm them.
The clocks outside strike 3.
Only 3, and quite dark outside already. It has not been light all day this day.
This ghostly bell rings in the distance again. Marley looks about him. Music in. Marley flies away. N.B. Marley's comings and goings should, from time to time, induce the explosion of the odd flashpot. I.H. Scene 2. Christmas Music In, sung by a live chorus full. At conclusion of song, sound fades under and into the distance. Lights up in set. Offices of Scrooge and Marley, LTD. Scrooge sits at his desk at work. Near him is a tiny fire. His door is open, and in his line of vision we see Scrooge's clerk, Bob Cratchit, who sits in a dismal tank of a cubicle, copying letters. Near Cratchit is a fire so tiny as to barely cast a light. Perhaps it is one pitifully glowing coal. Cratchit rubs his hands together, puts on a white comforter, and tries to heat his hands around his candle. Scrooge's nephew enters, unseen.
"What are you doing, Cratchit? Acting cold, are you? Next you'll be asking to replenish your coal from my coal box, won't you? Well, save your breath, Cratchit, unless you're prepared to find employ elsewhere."
"A Merry Christmas to you, Uncle. God save you."
"Bah, humbug."
"Christmas, a humbug, Uncle? I'm sure you don't mean that."
"I do." "Merry Christmas? What right do you have to be merry? What reason have you to be merry? You're poor enough."
"Oh, come then. What right have you to be dismal? What reason have you to be morose? You're rich enough."
"Bah, humbug."
"Don't be cross, Uncle."
"What else can I be, eh? When I live in a world of fools such as this? Merry Christmas? What's Christmas time to you but a time of paying bills without any money? A time for finding yourself a year older, but not an hour richer. If I could work my will, every idiot who goes about with Merry Christmas on his lips should be boiled with his own pudding and buried with a stake of holly through his heart. He should."
"Uncle."
"Nephew. You keep Christmas in your own way and let me keep it in mine."
"Keep it? But you don't keep it, Uncle."
"Let me leave it alone, then. Much good it has ever done you."
"There are many things from which I have derived good by which I have not profited, I dare say, Christmas among the rest. But I am sure that I always thought of Christmas time, when it has come round, as a good time, the only time I know of when men and women seem to open their shut-up hearts freely and to think of people below them as if they really were fellow passengers to the grave and not another race of creatures bound on other journeys. And therefore, Uncle, though it has never put a scrap of gold or silver in my pocket, I believe that it has done me good, and that it will do me good, and I say God bless it."
The clerk in the tank applauds, looks at the furious Scrooge and pokes out his tiny fire as if in exchange for the moment of impropriety. Scrooge yells at him.
Let me hear another sound from you, and you'll keep your Christmas by losing your situation.
You're quite a powerful speaker, sir. I wonder you don't go into Parliament.
Don't be angry, Uncle. Come, dine with us tomorrow.
I'd rather see myself dead than see myself with your family.
But why? Why?
Why did you get married?
Because I fell in love.
That, sir, is the only thing that you have said to me in your entire lifetime, which is even more ridiculous than Merry Christmas.
Turns from nephew.
Good afternoon.
Nay, uncle, you never came to see me before I married either. Why give it as a reason for not coming now?
Good afternoon, nephew.
I want nothing from you. I ask nothing of you. Why cannot we be friends?
Good afternoon.
I am sorry with all my heart to find you so resolute. But I have made the trial in homage to Christmas, and I'll keep my Christmas humor to the last. So, a Merry Christmas, Uncle.
Good afternoon.
And a Happy New Year.
Good afternoon!
He stands facing Scrooge.
Uncle, you are the most... No, I shan't. My Christmas humor is intact. God bless you, Uncle.
Nephew turns and starts for the door. He stops at Cratchit's cage.
Merry Christmas, Bob Cratchit.
Merry Christmas to you, sir, and a very, very happy New Year.
Calling across to them.
Oh, fine. A perfection. Just fine. To see the perfect pair of you. Husbands with wives and children to support. My clerk there earning 15 shillings a week. And the perfect pair of you talking about a Merry Christmas. I'll retire to Bedlam.
To Cratchit.
He's impossible.
Oh, mind him not, sir. He's getting on in years, and he's alone. He's noticed your visit. I'll wager your visit has warmed him.
Him? Uncle Ebenezer Scrooge? Warmed? You are a better Christian than I am, sir.
Opening the door for nephew, two do-gooders will enter as nephew exits.
Good day to you, sir, and God bless.
God bless.
One man who enters is portly, the other is thin. Both are pleasant.
Can I help you, gentlemen?
Carrying papers and books, looks around Cratchit to Scrooge.
Scrooge and Marley's, I believe. Have I the pleasure of addressing Mr. Scrooge or Mr. Marley?
Mr. Marley has been dead these 7 years. He died 7 years ago this very night.
We have no doubt his liberality is well represented by his surviving partner.
Offers his calling card. Handing back the card unlooked at.
Good afternoon.
This will take but a moment, sir.
At this festive season of the year, Mr. Scrooge, it is more than usually desirable that we should make some slight provision for the poor and destitute who suffer greatly at the present time. Many thousands are in want of common necessities. Hundreds of thousands are in want of common comfort, sir.
Are there no prisons?
Plenty of prisons.
And aren't the Union workhouses still in operation?
They are. Still, I wish that I could say that they are not.
The treadmill and the poor law are in full vigor, then?
Both very busy, sir.
Oh, I see. I was afraid, from what you said at first, that something had occurred to stop them from their useful course. I'm glad to hear it.
Under the impression that they scarcely furnish Christian cheer of mind or body to the multitude, a few of us are endeavoring to raise a fund to buy the poor some meat and drink and means of warmth. We choose this time because it is a time of all others when want is keenly felt and abundance rejoices.
Pen in hand, as well as notepad.
What shall I put you down for, sir?
Nothing.
You wish to be left anonymous?
I wish to be left alone.
Pauses, turns away, turns back to them.
Since you ask me what I wish, gentlemen, that is my answer. I help to support the establishments that I have mentioned. They cost enough, and those who are badly off must go there.
Many can't go there, and many would rather die.
If they would rather die, they had better do it, and decrease the surplus population. Besides, excuse me, I don't know that.
But you might know it.
It's not my business. It's enough for a man to understand his own business, and not to interfere with other people's. Mine occupies me constantly. Good afternoon, gentlemen.
Scrooge turns his back on the gentleman and returns to his desk.
But, sir, Mr. Scrooge, think of the poor.
Turns suddenly to them. Pauses.
Take your leave of my offices, sirs, while I am still smiling.
The thin man looks at the portly man. They are undone. They shrug. They move to door. Cratchit hops up to open it for them.
Good day, sir.
To Cratchit.
A Merry Christmas to you, sir. Yes, a Merry Christmas to both of you.
Merry Christmas!
Cratchit silently squeezes something into the hand of the thin man.
What's this?
Shh!
Cratchit opens the door. Wind and snow whistle into the room.
Thank you, sir. Thank you.
Cratchit closes the door and returns to his workplace. Scrooge is at his own counting table. He talks to Cratchit without looking up.
It's less of a time of year for being merry, and more a time of a year for being loony, if you ask me.
Well, I don't know, sir.
The clock's bell strikes 6 o'clock.
Well, there it is, eh? 6.
Saved by 6 bells, are you?
I must be going home.
He snuffs out his candle and puts on his hat.
I hope you have a very, very lovely day tomorrow, sir.
Oh, you'll be wanting the whole day tomorrow, I suppose.
If quite convenient, sir.
It's not convenient, and it's not fair. If I was to stop half a crown for it, you'd think yourself ill-used, I'll be bound.
Cratchit smiles faintly.
I don't know, sir.
And yet, you don't think me ill-used when I pay a day's wages for no work?
It's only but once a year.
A poor excuse for picking a man's pocket every 25th of December. But I suppose you must have the whole day. Be here all the earlier the next morning.
Oh, I will, sir. I will, I promise you. And, sir...
Don't say it, Cratchit.
But let me wish you a...
Don't say it, Cratchit. I warn you.
Sir.
Cratchit!
Cratchit opens the door.
All right then, sir. Well, Merry Christmas, Mr. Scrooge.
And he runs out the door, shutting same behind him. Scrooge moves to his desk, gathering his coat, hat, etc. A boy appears at his window, singing,
Away in a manger.
Scrooge seizes his ruler and whacks at the image of the boy outside. The boy leaves.
Bah! Humbug! Christmas! Bah! Humbug!
He shuts out the light. A note on the crossover following scene 2. Scrooge will walk alone to his rooms from his offices. As he makes a long, slow cross of the stage, the scenery should change. Christmas music will be heard. Various people will cross by Scrooge, often smiling happily. There will be occasional pleasant greetings tossed at him. Scrooge, in contrast to all, will grump and mumble. He will snap at passing boys, as might a horrid old hound. In short, Scrooge's sounds and movements will define him in contrast from all other people who cross the stage. He is the misanthrope, the malcontent, the miser. He is Scrooge. This statement of Scrooge's character, by contrast to all other characters, should seem comical to the audience. During Scrooge's crossover to his rooms, snow should begin to fall. All passers-by will hold their faces to the sky, smiling, allowing snow to shower them lightly. Scrooge, by contrast, will bat at the flakes with his walking stick, as might an insomniac swat at a sleep-stopping middle-of-the-night swarm of mosquitoes. He will comment on the blackness of the night, and finally reach his rooms and his encounter with the magical specter, Marley, his eternal mate. Scene 3.
No light at all. No moon. That is what is at the center of a Christmas Eve. Dead black. Void.
Scrooge puts his key into the door's keyhole. He has reached his rooms now. The door knocker changes and is now Marley's face. A musical sound, quickly, ghostly. Marley's image is not at all angry, but looks at Scrooge as did the old Marley look at Scrooge. The hair is curiously stirred, eyes wide open, dead, absent of focus. Scrooge stares wordlessly here. The face before his very eyes does deliquesce. It is a knocker again. Scrooge opens the door and checks the back of same, probably for Marley's pigtail. Seeing nothing but screws and nuts, Scrooge refuses the memory.
Pooh, pooh.
The sound of the door closing resounds throughout the house as thunder. Every room echoes the sound. Scrooge fastens the door and walks across the hall to the stairs, trimming his candle as he goes. And then he goes slowly up the staircase. He checks each room, sitting room, bedroom, lumber room. He looks under the sofa, under the table, nobody there. He fixes his evening gruel on the hob, changes his jacket. Scrooge sits near the tiny low-flamed fire, sipping his gruel. There are various pictures on the walls. All of them now show likenesses of Marley. Scrooge blinks his eyes.
Bah! Humbug!
Scrooge walks in a circle about the room. The pictures change back into their natural images. He sits down at the table in front of the fire. A bell hangs overhead. It begins to ring of its own accord. Slowly, surely begins the ringing of every bell in the house. They continue ringing for nearly half a minute. Scrooge is stunned by the phenomenon. The bells cease their ringing all at once. Deep below Scrooge, in the basement of the house, there is the sound of clanking, of some enormous chain being dragged across the floors, and now up the stairs. We hear doors flying open.
Bah, still! Humbug, still! This is not happening. I won't believe it.
Marley's ghost enters the room. He is horrible to look at. Pigtail, vest, suit as usual, but he drags an enormous chain now, to which is fastened cash boxes, keys, padlocks, ledgers, deeds, and heavy purses fashioned of steel. He is transparent. Marley stands opposite the stricken Scrooge.
Oh, no! What do you want of me?
Much.
Who are you?
Ask me who I was.
Who were you, then?
In life, I was your business partner, Jacob Marley.
I see. Can you sit down?
I can.
Do it, then.
I shall.
Marley sits opposite Scrooge in the chair across the table at the front of the fireplace.
You don't believe in me.
I don't.
Why do you doubt your senses?
Because every little thing affects them. A slight disorder of the stomach makes them cheat. You may be an undigested bit of beef, a blot of mustard, a crumb of cheese, a fragment of an underdone potato.
There's more of gravy than of grave about you, whatever you are.
There is a silence between them. Scrooge is made nervous by it. He picks up a toothpick.
Humbug! I tell you, humbug!
Marley opens his mouth and screams a ghostly, fearful scream. The scream echoes about each room of the house. Bats fly, cats screech, lightning flashes. Scrooge stands and walks backwards against the wall. Marley stands and screams again. This time he takes his head and lifts it from his shoulders. His head continues to scream. Marley's face again appears on every picture in the room, all screaming. Scrooge on his knees before Marley.
Ah! Mercy, dreadful apparition, mercy! Why, oh, why do you trouble me so? Man of the worldly mind, do you believe in me or not?
I do, I must. But why do spirits such as you walk the earth? And why do they come to me?
It is required of every man that the spirit within him should walk abroad among his fellow men and travel far and wide. And if that spirit goes not forth in life, it is condemned to do so after death.
Marley screams again, a tragic scream from his ghostly bones.
Ah! Oh! I wear the chain I forged in life. I made it, link by link and yard by yard. Is its pattern strange to you? Woe, would you know, you, Scrooge, the weight and length of the strong coil you bear yourself? It was full as heavy and long as this 7 Christmas Eves ago. You have labored on it since. It is a ponderous chain.
Terrified that a chain will appear about his body, Scrooge spins and waves the unwanted chain away. None, of course, appears. Sees Marley watching him dance about the room. Marley watches Scrooge silently.
Jacob. Old Jacob Marley, tell me more. Speak comfort to me, Jacob.
I have none to give. Comfort comes from other regions, Ebenezer Scrooge, and is conveyed by other ministers to other kinds of men. A very little more is all that is permitted to me. I cannot rest. I cannot stay. I cannot linger anywhere.
He moans again.
Oh, my spirit never walked beyond our counting house. Mark me. In life, my spirit never roved beyond the narrow limits of our money-changing hole, and weary journeys lie before me.
But you were always a good man of business, Jacob.
Screams word business. A flashpot explodes with him.
Business! Mankind was my business. The common welfare was my business. Charity, mercy, forbearance, benevolence were all my business.
Scrooge is quaking.
Hear me, Ebenezer Scrooge. My time is nearly gone.
I will, but don't be hard upon me. And don't be flowery, Jacob. Pray.
How is it that I appear before you in a shape that you can see I may not tell? I have sat invisible beside you many and many a day. That is no light part of my penance. I am here tonight to warn you that you have yet a chance and hope of escaping my fate. A chance and hope of my procuring, Ebenezer.
You were always a good friend to me. Thank ye.
You will be haunted by 3 spirits.
Would that be the chance and hope you mentioned, Jacob?
It is. I think I'd rather not. Without their visits, you cannot hope to shun the path I tread. Expect the first one tomorrow, when the bell tolls one.
Couldn't I take them all at once and get it over, Jacob?
Expect the second on the next night at the same hour. The third upon the next night when the last stroke of 12 has ceased to vibrate. Look to see me no more. Others may, but you may not. And look that for your own sake you remember what has passed between us.
Marley places his head back upon his shoulders. He approaches the window and beckons to Scrooge to watch. Outside the window, specters fly by, carrying money boxes and chains. They make a confused sound of lamentation. Marley, after listening a moment, joins into their mournful dirge. He leans to the window and floats out into the bleak, dark night. He is gone. Rushing to the window.
Jacob! No, Jacob! Don't leave me! I'm frightened!
He sees that Marley has gone. He looks outside. He pulls the shutter closed so that the scene is blocked from his view. All sound stops. After a pause, he reopens the shutter, and all is quiet, as it should be on Christmas Eve. Carolers carol out of doors in the distance. Scrooge closes the shutter and walks down the stairs. He examines the door by which Marley first entered.
No one here at all. Did I imagine all that? Humbug!
He looks about the room.
I did imagine it. It only happened in my foulest dream mind, didn't it? An undigested bit of...
Thunder and lightning in the room. Suddenly...
Sorry! Sorry!
There is silence again. The lights fade out. Scene 4. Christmas music. Choral. Hark the Herald Angels Sing. Sung by an onstage choir of children, spotlighted downstage center. Above, Scrooge in his bed, dead to the world, asleep in his darkened room. It should appear that the choir is singing somewhere outside of the house, of course, and a use of scrim is thus suggested. When the singing is ended, the choir should fade out of view, and Marley should fade into view in their place. Directly to audience.
From this point forth, I shall be quite visible to you, but invisible to him. He will feel my presence, nevertheless, for unless my senses fail me completely, we are, you and I, witness to the changing of a miser. That one, my partner in life, in business, and in eternity. That one, Scrooge.
Moves to staircase below Scrooge.
See him now. He endeavors to pierce the darkness with his ferret eyes.
To audience.
See him now. He listens for the hour.
The bells toll. Scrooge is awakened and quakes as the hour approaches 1 o'clock, but the bells stop their sound at the hour of 12.
Midnight? Why, this isn't possible. It was past 2 when I went to bed. An icicle must have gotten into the clock's works. I couldn't have slept through the whole day and far into another night. It isn't possible that anything has happened to the sun. And this is 12 at noon.
He runs to window, unshutters same. It is night.
Night still. Quiet. Normal for the season. Cold. It is certainly not noon. I cannot in any way afford to lose my days. Securities come due. Promissory notes
interest on investments. These are things that happen in the daylight.
He returns to his bed.
Was this a dream?
Marley appears in his room. He speaks to the audience.
You see, he does not with faith believe in me fully, even still. Whatever will it take to turn the faith of a miser from money to men?
Another quarter and it'll be one, and Marley's ghosty friends will come.
Pauses, listens.
Where's the chime for one?
Ding dong.
A quarter past. Half past. A quarter to it. But where's the heavy bell of the hour, one?
This is a game in which I lose my senses. Perhaps if I allowed myself another short doze.
Doze, Ebenezer. Doze.
A heavy bell thuds its one ring, dull and definitely 1 o'clock. There's a flash of light. Scrooge sits up in a sudden. A hand draws back the curtains by his bed. He sees it.
A hand! Who owns it? Hello?
Ghostly music again, but of a new nature to the play. A strange figure stands before Scrooge, like a child, yet at the same time like an old man. White hair, but unwrinkled skin. Long, muscular arms, but delicate legs and feet. Wears white tunic, lustrous belt cinches waist, branch of fresh green holly in its hand, but has its dress trimmed with fresh summer flowers. Clear jets of light spring from the crown of its head, holds cap in hand. The spirit is called Past.
Are you the spirit, sir, whose coming was foretold to me?
I am.
Does he take this to be a vision of his greengrocer?
Who? And what are you?
I am the ghost of Christmas past.
Long past?
Your past.
May I ask, please, sir, what business you have here with me?
Your welfare.
Not to sound ungrateful, sir, and really, please do understand that I am plenty obliged for your concern, but really, kind spirit, it would have done all the better for my welfare to have been left alone altogether, to have slept peacefully through this night.
Your reclamation, then? Take heed!
My what?
Motioning to Scrooge and taking his arm.
Rise! Fly with me!
He leads Scrooge to the window.
Fly! But I am immortal and cannot fly!
Pointing to his heart.
Bear but a touch of my hand here, and you shall be upheld in more than this.
Scrooge touches the spirit's heart, and the lights dissolve into sparkly flickers. Lovely crystals of music are heard. The scene dissolves into another. Christmas music again. Scene 5. Scrooge and the ghost of Christmas Past walk together across an open stage. In the background, we see a field that is open, covered by a soft, downy snow, a country road.
Good heaven! I was bred in this place. I was a boy here.
Scrooge freezes, staring at the field beyond. Marley's ghost appears beside him, takes Scrooge's face in his hands, and turns his face to the audience.
You see this Scrooge, stricken by feeling, conscious of a thousand odors floating in the air, each one connected with a thousand thoughts and hopes and joys and care, long, long forgotten. This one, this Scrooge, before your very eyes, returns to life among the living.
To audience sternly.
You'd best pay your most careful attention. I would suggest wrapped.
There's a small flash and a puff of smoke, and Marley is gone again.
Your lip is trembling, Mr. Scrooge. And what is that upon your cheek?
Upon my cheek? Nothing. A blemish on the skin from the eating of overmuch grease. Nothing.
Kind spirit of Christmas past, lead me where you will, but quickly. To be stagnant in this place is for me unbearable.
You recollect the way?
Remember it. I would know it blindfolded. My bridge, my church, my winding river.
Staggers about trying to see it all at once. He weeps again.
These are but shadows of things that have been. They have no consciousness of us.
Four jocund travelers enter, singing a Christmas song in four-part harmony. God rest ye merry gentlemen.
Listen, I know these men. I know them. I remember the beauty of their song.
But why do you remember it so happily? It is Merry Christmas that they say to one another. What is Merry Christmas to you, Mr. Scrooge? Out upon Merry Christmas, right? What good has Merry Christmas ever done you, Mr. Scrooge?
After a long pause...
None. No good. None.
He bows his head.
Look you, sir, a school ahead. The schoolroom is not quite deserted. A solitary child, neglected by his friends, is left there still.
Scrooge falls to the ground, sobbing as he sees, and we see, a small boy, the young Scrooge, sitting and weeping bravely, alone at his desk, alone in a vast space. A void.
I cannot look on him.
You must, Mr. Scrooge. You must.
It's me.
Pauses, weeps.
Poor boy. He lived inside his head, alone.
Pauses, weeps.
Poor boy.
Pauses, stops his weeping.
I wish.
Dries his eyes on his cuff.
Ah, it's too late.
What is the matter?
There was a boy singing a Christmas carol outside my door last night. I should like to have given him something, that's all.
Smiles. Waves his hand to Scrooge.
Come. Let us see another Christmas.
Lights out on little boy. A flash of light. A puff of smoke. Lights up on older boy.
Look! Me again! Older now!
Oh, yes. Still alone.
The boy, a slightly older Scrooge, sits alone in a chair reading. The door to the room opens, and a young girl enters. She is much, much younger than this slightly older Scrooge. She is, say, 6, and he is, say, 12. Elder Scrooge and the ghost of Christmas past stand watching the scene, unseen.
Dear, dear brother, I've come to bring you home.
Home, little fan?
Yes, home for good and all. Father is so much kinder than he ever used to be, and home's like heaven. He spoke so gently to me one dear night when I was going to bed that I was not afraid to ask him once more if you might come home. And he said, yes, you should, and sent me in a coach to bring you. And you're to be a man and are never to come back here. But first we are to be together all the Christmas long and have the merriest time in the world.
You are quite a woman, little fan.
Laughing, she drags at boy, causing him to stumble to the door with her. Suddenly, we hear a mean and terrible voice in the hallway. Off. It is the schoolmaster.
Bring down Master Scrooge's travel box at once. He is to travel.
Who is that, Ebenezer?
Oh, quiet, Fan. It is the schoolmaster himself.
The door bursts open, and into the room bursts with it the schoolmaster.
Master Scrooge?
Oh, schoolmaster, I'd like you to meet my little sister, Fan, sir.
Two boys struggle on with Scrooge's trunk.
Pleased, sir.
She curtsies.
You are to travel, Master Scrooge.
Yes, sir. I know, sir.
All start to exit, but Fan grabs the coattail of the mean old schoolmaster.
Fan!
What's this?
Pardon, sir, but I believe that you've forgotten to say your goodbye to my brother, Ebenezer, who stands still now awaiting it.
She smiles, curtsies, lowers her eyes.
Pardon, sir.
Well, then.
Outstretches hand.
Goodbye, Scrooge.
Well, goodbye, schoolmaster.
Lights fade out on all but boy looking at Fan, and Scrooge and Past looking at them.
Oh, my dear, dear little sister, Fan. How I loved her.
Always a delicate creature whom a breath might have withered, but she had a large heart.
So she had.
She died a woman, and had, as I think, children.
One child.
True. Your nephew.
Yes.
Fine, then. We move on, Mr. Scrooge. That warehouse there, do you know it?
Know it? Wasn't I apprenticed there?
We'll have a look.
They enter the warehouse. The lights crossfade with them, coming up on an old man in Welsh wig. Fezziwig.
Why, it's old Fezziwig. Bless his heart. It's Fezziwig. Alive again.
Fezziwig sits behind a large, high desk, counting. He lays down his pen, looks at the clock. 7 bells sound.
Quittin' time!
Quittin' time!
He takes off his waistcoat and laughs, calls off.
Ebenezer! Dick!
Dick Wilkins and Ebenezer Scrooge, a young man version, enter the room. Dick and Ebenezer are Fezziwig's apprentices.
Dick Wilkins, to be sure. My fellow apprentice. Bless my soul, yes. There he is. He was very much attached to me, was Dick. Poor Dick. Dear, dear.
Yo-ho, my boys! No more work tonight. Christmas Eve, Dick. Christmas, Ebenezer.
They stand at attention in front of Fezziwig, laughing.
Hilly-ho! Clear away! And let's have lots of room here! Hilly-ho, Dick! Cheer up, Ebenezer!
The young men clear the room, sweep the floor, straighten the pictures, trim the lamps, etc. The space is clear now. A fiddler enters, fiddling.
Hi-ho, Matthew! Fiddle away! Where are my daughters?
The fiddler plays. 3 young daughters of Fezziwig enter, followed by 6 young male suitors. They are dancing to the music. All employees come in. Workers, clerks, housemaids, cousins, the baker, etc. All dance. Full number wanted here. Throughout the dance, food is brought into the feast. It is eaten in dance by the dancers. Ebenezer dances with all 3 of the daughters, as does Dick. They compete for the daughters happily in the dance. Fezziwig dances with his daughters. Fezziwig dances with Dick and Ebenezer. The music changes. Mrs. Fezziwig enters. She lovingly scolds her husband. They dance. She dances with Ebenezer, lifting him and throwing him about. She is enormously fat. When the dance is ended, they all dance off, floating away, as does the music. Scrooge and the Ghost of Christmas Past stand alone now. The music is gone.
It was a small matter that Fezziwig made those silly folks so full of gratitude.
Small.
Shh. Lights up on Dick and Ebenezer.
We are blessed, Ebenezer, truly, to have such a master as Mr. Fezziwig.
He is the best, best, the very and absolute best. If ever I own a firm of my own, I shall treat my apprentices with the same dignity and the same grace. We have learned a wonderful lesson from the master, Dick.
Ah, that's a fact, Ebenezer, that's a fact.
Was it not a small matter, really? He spent but a few pounds of his mortal money on your small party. 3 or 4 pounds, perhaps. Is that so much that he deserves such praise as you and Dick so lavish now?
It isn't that. It isn't that, Spirit. Fezziwig had the power to make us happy or unhappy, to make our service light or burdensome, a pleasure or a toil. The happiness he gave is quite as great as if it cost him a fortune.
What is the matter?
Nothing particular.
Something, I think.
No, no. I should like to be able to say a word or two to my clerk just now. That's all.
Ebenezer enters the room and shuts down all the lamps. He stretches and yawns. The ghost of Christmas Past turns to Scrooge. All of a sudden...
My time grows short! Quick!
In a flash of light, Ebenezer is gone, and in his place stands an older Scrooge. This one a man in the prime of his life. Beside him stands a young woman in a mourning dress. She is crying. She speaks to the man with hostility.
It matters little. To you, very little. Another idol has displaced me.
What idol has displaced you?
A golden one.
This is an even-handed dealing of the world. There is nothing on which it is so hard as poverty, and there is nothing it professes to condemn with such severity as the pursuit of wealth.
You fear the world too much. Have I not seen your nobler aspirations fall off one by one until the master passion, gain, engrosses you? Have I not?
No!
What then? Even if I have grown so much wiser, what then? Have I changed towards you?
No.
Am I?
Our contract is an old one. It was made when we were both poor and content to be so. You are changed. When it was made, you were another man.
I was not another man. I was a boy.
Your own feeling tells you that you were not what you are. I am. That which promised happiness when we were one in heart is fraught with misery now that we are two.
No!
How often and how keenly I have thought of this, I will not say. It is enough that I have thought of it and can release you.
Don't release me, madam.
Have I ever sought release?
In words? No, never.
In what, then?
In a changed nature, in an altered spirit. In everything that made my love of any worth or value in your sight. If this has never been between us, tell me, would you seek me out and try to win me now? Ah, no.
Ah, yes.
You think not?
I would gladly think otherwise if I could, heaven knows. But if you were free today, tomorrow, yesterday, can even I believe that you would choose a dowerless girl? You, who in your very confidence with her weigh everything by gain, or, choosing her, do I not know that your repentance and regret would surely follow? I do, and I release you, with a full heart for the love of him you once were.
Please, I...
Please, I...
Please, you may... The memory of what is past half makes me hope you will have pain in this. A very, very brief time, and you will dismiss the memory of it as an unprofitable dream from which it happened well that you awoke. May you be happy in the life that you have chosen for yourself.
No!
Yourself. Alone.
No!
Goodbye, Ebenezer.
Don't let her go!
Goodbye.
No!
She exits. Scrooge goes to younger man himself.
You fool! Mindless loon! You fool!
To exited woman.
Fool. Mindless loon. Fool.
Don't say that. Spirit, remove me from this place.
I have told you these were shadows of the things that have been. They are what they are. Do not blame me, Mr. Scrooge.
Remove me! I cannot bear it!
The faces of all who appeared in this scene are now projected for a moment around the stage, enormous, flimsy, silent.
Leave me! Take me back! Haunt me no longer!
There is a sudden flash of light, a flare. The ghost of Christmas past is gone. Scrooge is, for the moment, alone on stage. His bed is turned down across the stage. A small candle burns now in Scrooge's hand. There is a child's cap in his other hand. He slowly crosses the stage to his bed to sleep. Marley appears behind Scrooge, who continues his long, elderly cross to bed. Marley speaks directly to the audience.
Scrooge must sleep now. He must surrender to the irresistible drowsiness caused by the recognition of what was. The cap he carries is from 10 lives past. His boyhood cap, donned atop a hopeful, hairy head, askew, perhaps, or at a rakish angle, doffed now in honor of regret, perhaps even too heavy to carry in his present state of weak remorse.
Scrooge drops the cap. He lies atop his bed. He sleeps. To audience.
He sleeps. For him, there's even more trouble ahead. For you, the playhouse tells me there's hot cider, as should be your anticipation for the specter of Christmas present and future, for I promise you both. So, I pray you, hurry back to your seats, refreshed and ready for a miser to turn his coat of gray into a blazing Christmas holly red.
A flash of lightning, a clap of thunder, bats fly, ghostly music. Marley is gone.